Welcome, everyone, to the monthly membership call from the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School. Today is April 30th, 2018, and my name is Eric Roth, the Managing Director. And we're, of course, here with Daniel Giammario, the founder of the Shamanic Astrology Paradigm, and SAMS. And we're here to talk about the astronomical, astrological, and mythological and other related things to this paradigm that are going on in the month of May of this year, 2018. And there's definitely quite a bit to talk about. So, Daniel, why don't we start off with some announcements first?
Okay. You go ahead.
All right. We have... coming up this month, we have on May 24th, we have a Uranus in Taurus teleclass Daniel and I are doing at 5 p.m. Pacific, and it's part of the 2018 teleclass series, and that can be found on shamanicastrology.com. Daniel, you also have an event going on in Bali this month.
Yes, I leave to go there next Tuesday, and have a not a huge group, but quite a nice group of primarily younger people that have been put together by Levi. And so I'll be over there for about 11 days in Bali. It's the first time I've been back there in 2 years, so that'll be it's an official class. It's extending it one extra day, so we have some extra things to do there in Bali, particularly for individuals that might be going there just for the course, that have a day to go to some of the sites there. So it's 6 days, 6 days and five night course, and that's the script and archetype, the first course. So it's interesting that up to this point I've done the timeline there, and I've also done the sacred marriage class there, but never the very first class. So. Anybody out there wants to go to Bali and take a course, well, you know, there's still room.
And then we also have a weekend event in California at the University of Earth, igniting the co-creation of with the elements. Kaylin Castell is leading, facilitating that group between June 8th and 10th. And then we've recently posted some events, two events in particular, on the events page on the Shamanic Astrology website about the 2019 events coming up at the end of February and early March, which Daniel will be in the United States to teach in Arizona, southern Arizona.
The only other thing I can think of is the June solstice class.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. And that's going to be free.
We haven't really released we haven't released the details of the information on that yet. That'll be a free offering.
Yes, that should be. Details should be coming soon with that. Okay. Well, let's, Daniel. Why don't we start with what?
Yes.
With what we start with.
Yeah, I always like to begin these by first looking at where the visible planets are. And then follow that by looking and seeing what the planets themselves are doing through the zodiac over this next month. Mercury, unless you're listening from the southern hemisphere, this is, for the northern hemisphere people, is the least visible of all the morning star Mercury apparitions. Mercury was just at its greatest elongation yesterday, April 29th, but I don't know if anybody up there in the northern hemisphere actually saw it. But technically, Mercury will be in the morning sky, very bright in the morning sky for southern hemisphere people, through May 29th. And then on May 29th, Mercury will go behind the Sun in its exterior conjunction, and that's the phase of Mercury that's the cycle pump phase. We probably will have something to say about that in the next month. But anyway, Mercury is not good. Even though it's technically morning sky, you're not going to see much of it. Meanwhile, Venus, you can't miss Venus. even though Venus as a morning star has not yet reached the point in its synodic cycle of where it's going, getting really far away from the horizon and from the sun. Actually, it doesn't really rise much higher the entire month, and it kind of stays a minus 3.9 magnitude during the month of May. There will be a conjunction with the moon that happens during the month. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the call. Mars, well, of course, Mars is over these next months is the star of the show. Actually, during the month of May, Mars begins at minus 0.4 and goes all the way to minus 1.2. I don't know. I mean, I look at Mars a lot. I mean, we're able to see it pretty well here in the morning. It almost looks like, I mean, I maybe it's my imagination, but it's like it seems to get brighter every day. You can kind of detect it brightening as we get up to the time period where it will be brighter than Jupiter. And then also in the morning, technically in the morning sky, is Jupiter, but it's dominating the entire night sky. And the reason why we say technically it's a morning planet until May 9th, but that's the point when Jupiter is in opposition to the sun. And so it's actually technically, we use that kind of language, I mean, it goes from the morning sky to the evening sky, that's really not that important to because it's really like up there high above the sky dominating the entire evening. You can't miss it. And it's minus 2.5. And then Saturn, also morning sky, plus 0.2. You know, so basically all the planets are either high in the sky or in the morning sky, with the exception of, I think I made a rather major mistake in what I'm sharing with you. Obviously, Venus is evening, not morning, so sorry about that. I don't know if you noticed me making that mistake, Eric. Venus is, of course, the bright thing in the evening sky, not yes. Morning sky. So. But everything else is in the morning sky. Now, meanwhile, what is the movement of the planets through the zodiac this month? Mercury will go all the way from about 14 Aries to the beginning of next month for Gemini. So you can get a good sense about how fast Mercury is capable of moving. It's going through like a sign and a half in a month. Venus, which begins the month very close to Aldebaran, the red star, the bullseye star, goes from 7 Gemini, and then when we get to the end of the month of May, 1449 Cancer. And I was discussing this with Eric before the call. And mainly, the entire month, Venus is moving through the sacred hoop. The sacred hoop is bounded by Pleiades at about 29 Taurus, 0 Gemini. And the other end of it is around 22 Cancer at Castor and Pollux. So from 7 Gemini to 14 Cancer, this is the entirety of the month Venus is moving through the hoop. And it's a beautiful time of the year to be able to see the sacred hoop, and with Venus being the spotlight in it. And that includes Venus being right exactly at the June solstice point, the Cancer solstice, right in the center of the sacred hoop. Mars will move from 23 Capricorn, and then by the time we get to June 1st, 5 Aquarius. So it's not moving that far, actually, you know, but only about 12 degrees. And the reason for that is because Mars is slowing down as it approaches its retrograde point. Jupiter now is in a retrograde motion. It starts the month in 19 Scorpio, and by the end of the month, it will have retrograded back to 1535 Scorpio. And if you watch that on the sky, it's backtracking now, retrograding back to the balance beam of the scales. 15 Scorpio is Jupiter Janubi, and so we might discuss that a little bit more later in the call. Saturn is also retrograding from 9 Capricorn back to 741 Capricorn, so it's not moving very fast. Even retrograde, it's about the same part of the sky. Then we get to Uranus, and there's a rather major event in the Uranian cycle in May. The reason why we have a whole teleclass dedicated to it. And that is Uranus is moving, ingressing into Taurus, May 15th. And then by the time we get to the beginning of June, Uranus will have reached 049 Taurus. Neptune, beginning at 1551 Pisces, does not make it through an entire degree. So by the time we get to June 1st, it's up to 1624 Pisces. Pluto, retrograde now, but just moving very slowly. It's been hanging out at 2116, 2117 Capricorn for weeks. But by the time that we get to June 1st, it'll be at 2055 Capricorn. Meanwhile, the nodes of the moon have now started to speed up in their retrograde motion, because we're now in between eclipse seasons. So in between eclipse seasons, the nodes move faster. And at the beginning of the month, 10, 17, Leo, Aquarius. And by the beginning of June, 7, 14, Leo, Aquarius. So it's moves like 3 degrees in the month of May. Chiron moves from 042 Aries through 155 Aries, more than a degree. And then I will reserve speaking about Vesta. We'll turn that over to Eric to talk about what's happening with Vesta. Actually, Vesta is the only one of these items, any of these planetary symbols, that is actually making a directional change. So you want to
Yes.
bring that up?
Yes, thank you, Daniel. Vesta begins the month of May at 4 degrees, 42 minutes Capricorn. And so pay an attention to where that is. It's located near, right in the galactic area of the galactic bulge, very close to galactic center, and, of course, the December solstice point. And so Vesta, the only asteroid we at certain times in its orbit that we can actually see with the naked eye, will be going retrograde this month because the Earth is essentially catching up to it in its orbit. And by next month, it will be in opposition to the Sun. And at a point near the solstice, in mid-June, June 19th in particular, where if you're under ideal conditions or near ideal conditions, you can actually, if you know where you're looking, you can actually pick out Vesta in the night sky. And so this is a time when it's only moving, and it starts out direct. On May 8th, it goes retrograde. Then it gets only to 2 degrees, 36 minutes Capricorn. So it's really almost static, only 2 degree difference between the start of the month and the end of the month. So Vesta is playing shifting into its next opposition with the Sun, similar to Mars is, except it's a little bit ahead of Mars in that way. Measuring a cycle of Vesta is like measuring a cycle of Mars in that we count it at the start of the opposition, because that is when we can actually see it in the sky. As a note, the other big asteroid, Ceres, which we're kind of looking into in the school a little bit, begins at 10:34 Leo and moves about a little over 9 degrees, so it moves to 1954 Leo by the end of this month of May.
Eric, what is the length of time of the Vesta synodic cycle?
Roughly, on average, 16 to 17 months.
Uh-huh. And so, therefore, in beginning it at the opposition, mm-hmm. this would then be a Capricorn overtone.
Actually, it retrogrades back to almost exactly at the galactic center point, 28, 29 Sagittarius.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So that could be useful for anyone who happens to be in their Vesta return.
Absolutely. And it'll be at a plus 5.3 magnitude. So, again, you wouldn't be able to see it under the city. You'd have to go out in to the desert or into the mountains to see it. But, yes, there's we do offer a teleclass on Vesta. And, actually, Daniel, I know that, and this is, it came as a bit of a surprise, a pleasant surprise, that you're going to be talking about it.
No, you are.
Oh, well, thanks for, I was wondering about that. I thought, well, that's a good time to talk about that. I hope that we can all talk about it. So, yes, well, I'll just say this. We will be talking about it.
And I'm also going to offer Gail a chance to talk about Sarah. She's always giving us a bunch of, trouble because we don't talk. That's her favorite. And so, okay, well, you do the synodic cycle of that, and you can present, So I'm going to offer her that chance, too.
That's great. Yeah, because I've been learning about Sarah's recently, and love to brainstorm more about that during the event.
Okay, thank you. So let's then begin our journey through the days of the month. And the first thing that comes to mind as I'm looking through the first week of May is that it'll be a very beautiful morning sky. Because between the 4th and the 5th, the moon will be sweeping past Jupiter. It'll be sweeping past Saturn and sweeping past Mars. Actually, the when I say sweeping past Jupiter, that's right now. In fact, we saw it this morning very, very amazingly close. But then on the 4th and the 5th, the conjunction with Saturn, followed by the conjunction with Mars. The conjunction with Mars then is accenting a certain portion of the Mars cycle, which we go into great detail in the Mars class that Eric and I do together. But we're now in the phase of the Mars cycle, phase 5, where it's preparing for its next journey. I mean, it's this elder wisdom portion of the Sagittarian overtone. The moon Mars is like a point of elder. It's like an elder phase of the Sagittarian god. I'm just bringing this up right now because this is one of the times you can really tune in to the symbolism. I mean, it's kind of like the moon is lineage, but the moon is also like a cosmic spotlight that's illuminating, what part of the sky is do you need to tune into. And so we have the moon with Jupiter tonight, and we have the moon with Saturn on the 4th, the moon with Mars on the 5th, this whole lineup in the morning sky. And then May 8th, we reach an important point in the Jupiter cycle itself. So the moon is highlighting Jupiter like today, but then on the 8th is the Jupiter-Sun opposition, which happens once a year. And just happens to be that this year it's May 8th, and so that's at about 18 Taurus and 18 Scorpio, where Mars will be at Jupiter will be 18 Scorpio and the Sun 18 Taurus. And that's a pretty strong accent point for our cross-quarter season of Beltane. And actually, I forgot to look, Eric. I don't know if you have the notes there of when the precise astronomical Beltane is?
Astronomical, when it reaches the 15-degree mark?
Yeah.
I can bring that up, actually.
Okay. But
yeah,
look,
there is.
Because it might be, sometimes it's the 8th, but let me take a look here. Remember, the cross-quarter point, Beltane, is the exact midpoint between spring equinox and June solstice. And it looks like it is going to be, it's on the 5th, May 5th.
Yes, that's what I've got, too.
That's the true point of Beltane. But then, around the world, there have been secular holidays that have been identified with this time frame. If we go further back, of course, Beltane was celebrated as a rites of spring, kind of a way of having a participation mystique with nature. The birds and the bees, getting nature going again, and humans would participate that in a variety of different, sacred rites of passage involving fecundity and aliveness and passion and sexuality and kind of a way of helping nature continue to grow powerfully for the next year. But in more recent times, it's become part of the May Day celebrations. I don't know how strong they are in the U.S. anymore, but it's a big holiday in other parts of the world, and it actually celebrates workers, the workers' revolutions and so on. And whenever there's a May Day parade, it has to do with the proletariat rising up against the 1%, if we could put it that way. So it's become kind of more of a revolutionary kind of thing than the original Beltane stuff that's associated with it. So the Jupiter opposing Sun, Scorpio Taurus, is just adding to that strength and aliveness associated with what happens when you put Taurus and Scorpio together.
Oh, absolutely. And of course, Beltane is also related to the seasonal area and sort of the latitude you might be in at the time, because if you get closer to the equator, the seasonal variations are extremely minor. And so you don't have that same energetic feel, or certainly not visually, or in that same way as we do in the mid-northern latitudes.
Yes. Yeah, the way north, we talked about this on the new offering from the school, which are these cross-quarter opportunities to talk about the different elements with myself and with the quadrant committee members. And we talked about this a bit yesterday, that the cross-quarter festivals and ceremonies are more important the further north you go, because spring wouldn't be felt really until May if you're up in Scotland or Sweden or something. what we would call spring, summer, winter, fall is skewed a little bit further. So they kind of were located with the cross-quarters rather than what we normally think of as the way of dividing the year into four.
Right.
Okay, so do you have anything? I have a whole thing I want to do with the about the new moon, the 24-degree Taurus new moon. Did you have anything else on your list as far as during the first 10 or 12 days of May?
Actually, I do. There is something that is taking place that I found fascinating, especially in being able to navigate the sky, is that on May 2nd, Venus will be in conjunction with Aldebaran, the star that's in the Eye of the Bull constellation. And at the same time that's happening, the moon will be conjunct Antares at the heart of the Scorpion. And these two stars are nearly exactly opposite each other in the sky. And so as one is rising, the other is setting. And they are great markers for people to identify, to be able to see these stars that have such ancient origins and being able to create the from a sidereal perspective, their zodiac.
Yeah, the original thing. Yeah, that's fabulous to bring that up. I mean, because the original sidereal zodiac from Babylonia had those two stars as the prime fiducial, and they set the zodiac at where the Aldebaran was exactly 15 degrees Taurus, and then everything else was measured off from the bullseye star, and then exactly the opposite, as you pointed out, is Antares, and that was the ancient star-based zodiac before this sign-based astrology came in order to recognize the season, that there's different seasons.
Right. Yeah, so for those of you, this, you know, that's a wonderful opportunity to learn about the night sky, is to be able to tune into two very bright stars that can be easily found by even brighter objects nearby, like, for example, in this case, Venus with Aldebaran and the Moon with Antares. Antares is at 10 Sagittarius sign-wise, and Aldebaran is at roughly 10 Gemini sign-wise. And so the Moon and Venus will be in opposition to each other on that day. So that's what I wanted to share.
Yeah, that's great. I do note that, you know, we hardly ever bring up trines very often, but there is an important one on May 11th, which is the Sun trine Pluto, 21 Taurus, 21 Capricorn. So that can be very helpful, useful for those that happen to have important configurations on their chart around those degrees of Earth signs of Taurus, Capricorn, Virgo, around 20, 21, 22.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mercury goes into Taurus on May 13th. And then we get to a pretty powerful window around the new moon. Tuesday, May 15th, 24 Taurus, 36, the new moon of May. And while there's a lot of stuff going on that day, and I'm going to give you just a little bit of additional framework here on how to work with the new moon. These days are extremely useful for envisioning how you would like the next month to go for you. Imagine you're planting seeds and setting intentions. This is a time for going within, taking some time to yourself, and creating your intentions with as much lucidity and clarity as possible. Themes to consider when setting the intentions, and this is specifically for this new moon, are you savoring and enjoying your life in ways other than ambition, success, or fame? Do you think you have to earn the right to feel good? Do you give more than you receive? Do you have anything against receiving? Do you feel guilty and think you're being selfish when you receive or put yourself first? Do you stop and smell the roses? Consider adding one or more activities to your life for just indulging your senses, emphasizing what feels good to you, not anyone else, unless it's where giving to you gives them pleasure. Consider emphasizing the essence and the artistry of true intimacy for its own sake, and that others can measure up to your standards. Remember that it's you that determines and is the standard bearer for beauty, aesthetics, intimacy, and art. The goal is to feel safe and secure in your body and not sell out to external and transitory external security as a substitute. So those are just some suggestions of themes when planting the seeds of intention at a new moon, and very specifically for this Taurus new moon. You might want to, let's talk about, Eric, go ahead and talk about the other things happening on May 15th.
Yes. Of course, Mars, of course, goes into Aquarius on that day, beginning the pre-echo of the opposition with the Sun. Mars is getting brighter and brighter, and it's going into the sign of its next synodic cycle, and is going to be in that region of the sky for several months. It's already moving into that zone. And so that's Mars will be playing an important role. And, of course, Aquarius is the revolutionary. It's about cosmic consciousness and idealistic look at humanity and novelty and newness, breakthroughs with ideas and being able to see as an eagle's eye view. This is what Aquarius stands for, and Mars is moving into that and beginning. And from a Mars synodic cycle perspective, phase zero, it's the incubation of this synodic cycle. And at the same time that's happening, we have Uranus moving into the sign of Taurus. And really, a lot of the questions you just asked, Daniel, are part of this ingress into Taurus. You know, it's I've done a couple of charts recently where people are having their personal points on their chart activated by Uranus moving over 0, 1, 2 degrees Taurus. So all and on addition to the new moon, all in combination on May 15th, all on one day.
The beginning of a whole new phase of the Mars cycle. And then the beginning of a whole new 7-year run of Uranus into a different sign. And both of them blending together what is similar about Uranus and what is similar about Aquarius. I mean, they're not identical symbols, but they certainly do have a lot of things that are resonant. And to have them both be associated here, you know, with Mars, and then Uranus moving into Taurus and the new moon Taurus, got some pretty powerful imagery, and it gets the action really gets started really quickly, because the very next day Mars is in square to Uranus, remarkably enough, you know. So it's but you can imagine why that would happen. I mean, you have Uranus moving into Taurus, Mars moving into Aquarius, self-interest, self-exploration signs that are standing in 90-degree angle to each other. So it's just a few hours later, Mars square Uranus, zero Aquarius, zero Taurus. It's kind of the energy of being really stirred up, but those are the seeds that are being planted. It's actually to be willing to plant those seeds of revolutionary concepts, avant-garde, progressive concepts related to Taurus, and then the fact that Mars is moving into that sign. We're seeding new possibilities here for certain.
Yeah, it feels like, you know, this Uranus is Taurus is the pleasures of the body, and Aquarius is the pleasures of mind and consciousness, mm-hmm. and they're square to each other, but they both deal with self-exploration. And I don't know, this combination is quite unique.
Mm-hmm. It truly is. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I was going to mention something about the last time Uranus was in Taurus, which we're going to expand upon, you know, of course, in a few weeks. Something that I recently wrote about, and last time Uranus was in Taurus was between 1934 and 1942, give or take. And during that time, one thing that did happen, aside from the beginning of the lead-up to World War II, domestically, the U.S. passed the marijuana taxation law. It was the first time the U.S. attempted to, basically get revenue and license a controlled substance. That was originally overturned in 1970, but we're coming up now, Uranus moving into Taurus, this is the last time that Uranus was in Taurus. So we're at a Uranus return from that period of time, where you're seeing on a domestic level a powerful movement to legalize and take, at least at the very least, remove marijuana from that Schedule 1 listing on the U.S. government, and making it a crime, to possess it and to use it in all forms, not just in the recreational uses, but in medicinal uses and even industrial uses. During World War II, the U.S. Had a shortage of certain supplies, and they used hemp to make clothing for their soldiers and for other things. So that's, these are the various, marijuana and the various plants that are related to that to create all of these uses for it. And, of course, now it's a way for money to be generated, and so there's a big push toward legalizing it. So I think it's going to take some surprise turns and how that comes about over the next few years, because this is Uranus involved, and so expect the unexpected.
Mm-hmm. The combination of Taurus and Aquarius, to speculate on that a little bit more is certainly worthy as we go into this next month, because our definition of those two, Aquarius means to have the courage to expand consciousness as far out as possible for its own sake, for its own pleasure, the enjoyment of that process. And Taurus is to have the courage to explore the full, without guilt, without shame, the possibilities of what happens when we have a physical body, how much pleasure and joy and aesthetics and intimacy can happen in the body. So, rather than putting a lot of attention on the traditional meaning of the square, something like a problem, there's an activation of these two forces together. And we don't know what's going to come out of it, but I think that's what the proposition here is, about how to inject Aquarian avant-garde, progressive freedom motives, and then Taurus into the enjoyment without guilt and shame of what's happening in the physical body. I think we'll see these themes develop even more, and then we get to the very next thing that happens in this time period right around the new moon, which is the next moon-Venus conjunction. So, on the, depending on where you are in the world, it could either be the morning of the 16th or the morning of the 17th. It might be the closest time to see this, and the most visual strength of the conjunction. It's the third chakra. The third gate following Venus rising from the underworld, in the Inanna's underworld and the shamanic death and rebirth underworld. And here we now get to the third chakra. And however you want to view the third chakra, I look at it as will, as physical strength, of the solidity of the solar plexus, the power chakra, So it's definitely an embodiment kind of a moon-Venus conjunction, which I think follows in nicely following the clues we get from Uranus going into Taurus and Mars going into Aquarius. And now we have the square we talked about, and then the moon-Venus conjunction showing up brilliantly on the in the morning sky at the third chakra gate.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Right at the end of Gemini, about 28 degrees Gemini, just before Venus moves into Cancer on the 19th, which is the solstice point.
Almost the galactic edge, the mm-hmm. Center point of the hoop, and then followed right up by the fact that Venus will be at zero Cancer right. The June solstice point, right at the smack in the middle, the exact center point of the hoop on the 18th and 19th. So that's that. To me, whenever I see anything that's right there in the middle of the sacred hoop, if we imagine what that part of the sky has historically represented, on one level, it is said by many cultures that's where the soul enters. It enters at that gate, just below the Roman numeral two of the twins. So you go through, you bypass the gates of duality, and then you go down the Milky Way. you know, the world tree or the cosmic river. The soul enters right at that point, so that all of this is happening with that imagery. That it's so basically that there's new possibilities coming into this plane at this time period. And that's certainly quite an Aquarian approach. You know, it's like bringing in a new vision, higher vision, transcendent views, egalitarian, universal, higher love, higher meaning, higher purpose, higher truth. You know, coming in through that gate, and mediated by these other symbols that we've talked about here.
Yes, and I don't have anything else going on. There's a few items to talk about. Moon and Jupiter have another conjunction on the 27th of May at 16 Scorpio. And on the 29th, Mercury moves into Gemini. Was there anything else toward the end of the month that you saw, Daniel?
Oh, well, I want to discuss the full moon, but even before we get to the full moon, and I have some good stuff to share about that, I hope.
Okay.
Is that on May 25th, before we get to the full moon, there is a, it's one of those very, it's one of the few aspects that ever show up in the ephemeris, where they only give the outer planet aspects. And here we have, so what happens on the 25th is Jupiter trine Neptune. Here I am talking about a trine again. 16 Scorpio, 16 Pisces happening on that day. And there's two other planetary aspects on the same day. Mercury trine Pluto and Venus opposing Saturn. So that's actually a fair amount of planetary transit information on that day. But then we get to the full moon at May 29th, 8 degrees Sagittarius, Tuesday, May 29th, 8 Sag, full moon. And I wanted to share a couple insights about how to work with the full moon. I mean, because you can tune into these calls, you know, to get basic information about what's happening in the sky. But I wanted to offer some tools, let's say, for how to work with at least the main moon phases. We try to do the same thing in the Venus and Mars classes also, you know, come up with ways of framing our ceremonial work. So let's just look a little bit at the full moon. This is a time for maximum expansion, when the energies of life are most pronounced. Extreme kinds of experiences can be expected. On one hand, the overwhelming fullness of your consciousness and perceptions can be wildly exciting. Maximum aliveness can be quite a wonderful thing. It's great to be alive and to see and feel everything, even in the middle of the night. However, these kinds of experiences can also be so overwhelming as to create an overload. Less sleep, in many cases, can be expected, since consciousness is so expanded. For some, beware of manic behavior as well as irrational fears that can surface. This is understandable if aspects of ourselves or our environment previously hidden in the dark or repressed are all now exposed. At this time, the seeds of intention from several weeks ago at the new moon have now grown to their fullest and stand revealed. If you have intended well, this can be a really enjoyable time to bask in the joy of their manifestation. In such cases, who needs sleep? However, should you have not clearly intended or seeded at the new moon, or failed to take actions toward their manifestation, you could well be feeling remorseful, very disappointed in yourself, as you become increasingly aware of what you may have missed. Notice these feelings, but try to not be overly hard on yourself, as your self-judgment and oversensitivity to the judgment of others can also be greatly expanded with the full moon. An important factor to consider with this full moon is the challenge of sensory overload and pleasurable self-indulgence, especially if you're not used to it. This time is not one for aggressive action, accomplishment, or achievement. It is about slowing down and enjoying the present moment for as long as possible. Certainly emphasizes many things that you really enjoy as much as you can. Hobbies, intimacy, or just hanging out with true friends. The ancients called this Epicureanism. It emphasized intensity, meaning pleasure as deep as possible, endurance, meaning pleasure as long as possible, and moderation, meaning not too much and not too little. If, however, it's not been... Oh, wait a second, I already did that, sorry. Anyway, these are some thoughts about how to work with this particular time, and if there's anything to consider as a possibility of something that could go badly here, here's some warnings. Selfishness and self-centeredness bordering on narcissism, a strident expectation to receive as an entitlement, too much pleasure and self-indulgence bordering on hedonism, and being stubborn with an unwillingness to change or change direction. So what we're noticing here would be even though it's in Sagittarius, the full moon is like it's the fullness of what seeds had been intended at the new moon. So there's also that kind of if you overdo the intentions of the new moon, then you there's ramifications of it that happen at the full moon. So these are kinds of thoughts that we will continue to add to these monthly calls.
Great.
And, I guess the only other thing I have here, May 29th, Mercury goes into Gemini, and then nothing else. Was there anything else you wanted to discuss before we kind of open it up for comments and additional insights?
No. Just that, that I know we don't, I don't know if you mentioned this, but on May 20th, the sun moves into the seasonal sign of Gemini as well.
Yes.
But nothing else that's coming to mind until June. In fact, Daniel, I think you and I are doing the next call together.
No, we're not.
Or is it just Kaylin and I?
I think she'll be back on the next one. I mean, I could if we needed to, but we've done the last two, so, and I think she might want to get back on one.
Okay. I wasn't sure because I knew she had some... Yeah. Other stuff going on. So, okay. Well, you want to open it up?
Let's discuss more about that later because we still have to come up with the date, for the fire quadrant.
Sure.
No, that isn't happening until August. Sorry. I'm starting to get confused about what month it is. I've had the effect of the full moon myself here. Not much sleep last night, actually. What would be our normal date for the next one?
That would be May 28th.
May 29th. I mean, I could conceivably do it because I'll be in Manila then if Kaylin can't.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, great. Well, I can. Are you ready to open it up to folks?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, sure.
All right. And for those who want to be asking questions, feel free to push *6, and you can be in the queue. So we have, about 10, 15 minutes or so of time for questions. All right. Looks like we got a couple people there. So, Emma, you're the first one on there.
Is that me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. It was a wonderful class, and I really like the new format that you're using. I liked being the written a celestial timing also being included in it, because I now print them out again, and this way then I can follow day to day without having to turn on my computer or go to my ephemeris to see what's happening. There was one other thing. At the beginning of May, there was a where there was Saturn, Mars, and Pluto was in that whole group there, visible planets, and then Pluto was in the middle of them. And I thought that was very, very powerful. I mean, to me, that would be an extremely powerful time because I have Pluto now activating my Mars energy in Capricorn, and at the same time, it's Pluto is actually opposite itself in my chart now.
Well, yeah, it's true. The last few days, I mean, it was kind of going past that point now, but was the exact Mars Pluto alignment, which certainly I think we mentioned that in the call yesterday. That you don't see Pluto there, but certainly the alignment you're seeing up there in the sky, if you have something in those degrees, it certainly strengthens that a great deal. The other factor there is that it's presaging, it's leading us 2 years into the future. March 15th of 2020, we'll find four planets at that same place. We'll find Mars and Saturn and Jupiter and Pluto all in that exact same zone.
Wow. Are we going to be able to handle it?
Well, that's a question for the collectivity for certain. I think we can do whatever we can within our own lives individually to prepare for such a point of surrender.
You know, after having gone through the Aries Venus this Venus cycle here, and I got Phil and I both got the flu at the Death by Intent site, just as we had gone in the Venus cycle, had gone into that point, Death by Intent, and both of us got the flu, and I was extremely ill for 2 weeks. In fact, at that particular point, I went into complete surrender, and in my crazy, messed up dreams and awake time, I just finally said, okay, you guys, take me. If this is my exit point, take me. I'm willing. I finished. I will not desire to do anything else. Just take me. And at that particular point, I then started to get well. Now, this is not my Venus return, but it was Phil's Venus return. And somehow or another, a lot of times we share back and forth in our relationship of 46 years. We share these energies. Even one is going through it, the other one symbiotically is going through it at the same time. And it was really a powerful time. And I really, really got to know Pluto and the underworld at that time, because it was like, even though I wasn't conscious, didn't consciously go there, I was consciously accepting it. And I learned a little bit about surrender.
Yeah, that will actually be such an inquiry that will be on everyone's mind, I think, in 2020, because it'll be that union of Saturn and Pluto. And because what that brings up is the contrast between the kind of surrender, which is the Plutonian one, and the Saturn one, which is when really maybe it is the last skin. You know, it's the time period where the physical life is over, and it's that contrast between those two possibilities that surrender happens in both, but one of them is shamanic death and rebirth kind of surrender, and the other is when actually, okay, is when our time is up, and to be able to see back and forth between those two. I'm thinking very much of the Leonard Cohen album, where the most recent one, the one he did right before he passed, which has that great song in it, you know, like, "I'm ready, my Lord," you know. But then for him, it turned out to be Saturn, not just Pluto, even though he certainly had been prepared for it in a Plutonian sense.
I really, really understood this thing about Pluto does something that you are not going to expect. I had not had the flu for 49 years.
Wow.
And, I mean, and this was really, really devastating. Mm-hmm. So, but I've made friends with Pluto.
Yeah. Well, the whole world will have to be able to make friends, and particularly the United States will have to become friends with Pluto, because the U.S. is will be reaching shortly its Pluto return.
Ah.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. I'd put that out of mind. Oh, thank you so very much for a wonderful session and for the clarity on this, what's going on this month.
Thank you.
Thanks, Emma.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right. Gail.
Hello, you guys. We're doing a good job. Hello.
It's good to hear you, Gail.
I bet I know what you're going to talk about.
I'm just going to say I was on the call and I heard what you said about me, you know. My favorite goddess series. Yeah. So one of these days, yeah, I'll now that you've put it on the recording, I guess I'll have to get to work.
Well, I had neglected to send you the write-up that, although it's on the website now, for the advanced chart analysis class coming up in early March, and I did put in there that we would have a presentation on your favorite goddess, and I'm hoping you'll be ready to make the presentation yourself.
Okay, well, thank you. That gives me something to aim for.
Gail, it's the dates are actually February 23rd through the 27th.
Sorry, right. It's the cosmology at her place is after that, right?
Right.
Okay, well.
So if you go on the website, Gail, there's actually, if you just click on, I think it's just classes, and you'll see that there's a link to the 2019 events. And then you'll be able to get the download on the advanced chart analysis course.
Okay, I will. One thing, just for the record, I was noticing that when you were talking about where Venus is right now with Aldebaran, entering the hoop, and there was some slipping of the, I don't know, maybe I didn't hear it correctly, maybe I didn't hear all the words, but the 29 Taurus is where the hoop begins, 29 and
yes.
At Aldebaran, not Gemini, so I don't know. Because that Venus is going into Gemini now, I think there was some confusion in the words there, maybe. But so I'm just setting the record straight to make sure that everybody knows that it's.
Okay. Let me just reframe that. The parameters of the hoop are from the Pleiades, which I guess you could say, depending on which star you use, is the very last minutes of Taurus or the very first few minutes of Gemini,
yeah,
to 22 Cancer.
Right.
That's more than a month that for Venus to pass through that zone. But during the entire month of May, Venus is in the hoop.
Yes. So I love all the facts that you brought forth and the ceremonial the urge to ceremonially engage with the celestial timings. Thank you. That was very good. And the languaging around the self-interest, signs of self-interest. Yes. Well, I can use those reminders. Thank you. Thank you.
All
much.
Right. Very good.
Thank you, Gail.
Bye.
Bye. Well, that's Daniel, that's all we have on the queue, so we can wrap this up. Wait, we do have one other.
Okay.
Hold on. All right, so someone who just chimed in, please.
Hi, it's Bo. I didn't just sign in, actually. I've been on the whole call, but I just did just put my, I was waiting to see if there's anybody else in the queue. Hi there.
Hey, hi, Bo.
I love the reminders about the ceremonial intent and the themes informing and behind those. And I wondered if, just for interest's sake, I was just thinking about general intentions on a solar return, you know, irrespective of just transit cycles going on, et cetera. But, it just occurred to me, like, to ask for just a couple of themes around that for review. A solar return happening in this month with those things. I'm also going through, there's a Saturn-Venus cycle for me this whole time that Venus is going through the hoop as well. But mainly just the solar return.
Well, Bo, at least for me in my practice, I've experimented with solar returns a lot, but I've never found them to be that useful. Occasionally I'll have a client. Occasionally I have a client who is really, really heavily involved with solar returns, and I might give a shot in interpreting it. But to me, it, just the return of the sun to its original place is less important than when a planet with the sun returns. That's why the synodic returns are so important, because that's the reframing. That is the reframing of the angle between the sun and one or more other planets. The same thing would be true with the Metonic returns. When the sun near the birthday, the return of the sun to its original place, it also reestablishes, its original relationship with the moon. But a regular old solar return, to me, is simply part of that whole habit of elevating the sun too much. You know, I don't have anything. Pardon me, just got the hiccups.
Okay, that's actually great. It's reassuring. I thought maybe I was missing something. I'm actually turning 60 this year, and I've got all these friends in my life going, "It's your 60th. What are you going to do? What's the big thing?" You know, and I kind of go, actually, this is a fairly mellow year in comparison to some other ones that have been way more influential, important, nothing really, you know, that kind of thing.
But age 60 doesn't have a timeline, because you successfully navigated your second Saturn return. So what I would say is you're in the first year of the rest of your life. I mean, you know, this, so you can imagine yourself as being I'm one, you know.
That's helpful. Thank you. That's what occurred to me to just ask. Thanks for a great call.
Sure. Thanks a lot, Bob.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. Okay. If there's any other questions, please feel free to hit star 6. If not, we can wrap up the call here. We're about 4 minutes after the top of the hour. So, Daniel, was there any last thoughts you wanted to share here?
Can't think of anything at the moment, so we'll sign off for now, and we got more stuff coming up, so I'll be talking to you again soon here.
Yes, for sure. Oh. Well, thank you, everyone, for a great call, and we'll be, until next time.
Until next time. Okay, bye, everybody.
Bye.